You're listening to the Meet the Farmers podcast with me, Ben Eagle. To listen to previous episodes, visit thinkingcountry.com or find the podcast on iTunes by searching for Meet the Farmers. Hello and welcome to the show. This is episode number 40 of Meet the Farmers, and this is supported by the Mercer Charitable Foundation. Today I've travelled up to the West Midlands to meet third generation Staffordshire farmer Richard Bower, who farms with his father at Lower Drayton Farm in Penkridge. They run about 300 beef cattle based around a commercial suckler herd sired by pedigree Aberdeen Angus and Hereford Bulls. They also grow about 200 hectares of combinable crops and run a flock of about 100 sheep or so. Richard is heavily involved in farming politics and the NFU, and has chaired the NFU's Next Generation Policy Forum. He's branch chairman for Mid Staffordshire NFU. You'll notice this list is quite long. And Staffordshire NFU County Vice Chair. In the 2018 NFU elections, Richard stood to be Vice President. He also belongs to the National Federation of Young Farmers Clubs Agri Steering Group. He's a member of the European Council of Young Farmers and the World Farmers Organisation Future Leaders Group. Richard, that list is incredibly long. Why is it important for you to have a voice at the centre of all these farming organisations?
First of all, yeah, welcome to Lower Drayton Farm, Ben.
Thanks for having me. It's really good to be here, despite the traffic.
Exactly. No, well, thank you very much for coming all the way. I really appreciate it. I feel very fortunate to have all these opportunities within our industry, because I don't see myself as anything special. I just think there's lots and lots of opportunities there, and grab every opportunity that comes along. I didn't sit down 10 years ago and write out a plan and say, this is what I was going to do. I'm just very much an opportunist. So as one door opens, I walk through it, yeah. And I grab that opportunity.
Where do you think that came from? Was there a particular person who inspired you? Was there something that happened
I think from a young age, I've always been aware of how politics affects our industry through the BSE crisis in the 90s, when I was quite young at that stage, and then that meant that we had to have ear tags within the cattle and traceability and passports and whatever, foot and mouth crisis in 2001, and that's all been through my father's career. And I will admit, my father does moan about a lot of these things. Oh, we get all these rules and regulations. Well, I take the mindset, actually, let's have a seat at the table, let's be involved in these discussions, and let's help to shape our industry. There is actually a personal element in it as well. I completed a graduate scheme after going to university, and during that graduate scheme went on lots and lots of training.
Yeah. And if MDS, I definitely want to talk about later, because it's something we haven't actually covered on the podcast. It's a brilliant scheme.
Exactly, it's fantastic. And I'd say if you work for a big corporate business, you would go on periodic training courses. Working for a small family farm, unfortunately, there isn't as many training courses available. So being an NFU member, that is my self-development as well, really. And you learn things from other farmers.
Tell me about the farm here and your main enterprises.
We are predominantly, I'd say, traditional beef and cereal farmers. But just because that's the way we farm now, or we have farmed, is not going to be the way that we farm in the future, really. I think we've got to look for all opportunities. The way I see our industry going, I see us as food, fuel and fibre producers. Mm-hmm. And that's still a very, very important cornerstone of the business. I think environment, looking after the environment, enhancing the environment is another cornerstone of our business. But I think public engagement is the third cornerstone of our business and our industry. And yeah, you don't all have to open farm shops, but there's other ways to engage with the public as well. And that's the way we're shaping our business. Since the mid-2000s, we started by renting out a wood for a paintball site. And that wood wasn't earning us any income before. A guy came along and wanted to rent it for us for about £6,000 a year. So that's probably where the diversification started. Mm-hmm. Father did go through a divorce as well, so we had to look for different income streams to keep the business going. But now, probably diversification is about 20% of the business. Most of that is just renting out storage containers, in industrial units, a BMX track, a motocross track, clay pigeon shooting area. We're in the West Midlands, lots of people around us. But a couple of diversifications we run ourselves. So the one would be an open farm to the public. And the other one would be the farmhouse bed and breakfast, which are the main two.
That's quite a lot.
And we've got other plans as well, actually. We're converting barns into holiday lets, and we're converting a play barn on the farm. And I also should have said, we've got two care farms on the farm, which provide mental health and wellbeing classes for the local community.
So in terms of people on the place, with all that stuff going on, I assume there's quite a lot of people to go along with that.
Yeah. We had about 15,000 people on the farm last year. But with this play barn, we want to welcome about 75,000 visitors onto the farm in the next 12 months, really. And that will go up to 200,000 visitors, hopefully, in the next 5 years. And admittedly, it's because of our location, but yeah, we just make the most of our resources, really. Yeah.
In your arable enterprise, you have made some changes in recent years, including moving towards strip tillage. I can never remember on this podcast whether we come up with new terms all the time, but I think we probably have talked about it, but for the benefit of listeners, can you explain what strip tillage is and what benefits that has brought to you?
Yeah, no, and absolutely. Inversion tillage is where traditionally the farmers would plough the land and they'd turn over the soil to bring up fresh soil, bury all the trash, and you start with a nice clean seedbed, and it looks fantastic because it looks all brown and it's cosmetic and it is brilliant and it does produce a yield, but you are burning a lot of fossil fuel to turn that soil over. So then historically a lot of businesses have gone to non-inversion tillage, so where you don't turn the soil over but you just cultivate the top layer of the soil. The philosophy behind it is all the weed seeds are going to sit on top of the soil, so if you can cultivate those, get them to grow before you're going to plant the crop you want to grow, use something like glyphosate to spray off those weed seeds, and then you go in and plant your crop. So we ploughed us up until about 1998, and then we started to adopt minimum tillage cultivation, and then we've adopted strip tillage probably this last 4 years. So strip tillage is, yes, you still cultivate the top layer, but you don't cultivate very deep at all, and then you just go straight in with the drill. You spray off the weeds and you go straight in with the drill. But the drill has a number of uses. So the drill only works the ground where the seed is going to be placed. So what's the point of working the whole field when you're only going to be planting in strips? The drill has different tines on it as well. So it has like a leading tine that goes a little bit deeper than you're going to plant the seed. And then it has the coulter, which plants the seed on the side of the shoulder where the first tine has gone. But the whole point of the first tine, it creates a drainage channel, and it's where the seed's roots will go as well. And then behind the drill is the harrow, which covers the seed over. So the drill is doing three jobs in one. It leaves all the trash on top of the ground, so it doesn't look cosmetic. But actually, the advantage of that stops erosion as well. So it stops erosion of soils, and actually that trash can break down as well. And the earthworms encourage it to take that trash into the ground. So even myself, probably it took a bit of time to get around to that mentality. That the strips are slightly wider than conventional drilling as well. But actually, we find that more sunlight can get into the crop. The crop is a lot healthier, and the bushel weights are probably a little bit higher, and that's where you get yield from. So yeah, no, I won't be able to give you an exact figure of cost saving, but I can tell you I spend a lot less time on the tractor than I used to. So it's a lot more targeted approach.
Yeah. Which then frees you up to focus on other things as well.
Exactly.
So. Because you're exceptionally busy.
Yes. This is my dad, Ray. This is Ben. You've met Ben before.
Briggs
Place, Let's talk about life before you started working on the farm. You studied agri-food marketing and business at Harper Adams.
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
And uni life.
I always knew I was going to be a farmer during school, and I used to spend a lot of time on the farm. I always say I've got a brother and sister. They used to have horses, and they'd go off horse riding at the weekends. I'd go and sit on Dad with the tractor drilling, or go on the combine and whatever, and always had lots of toys. But my family probably said, there's no money in farming. Go and work for the supermarkets, go and work a bit higher up along the supply chain.
In the usual way of family farms.
Exactly. I did my GCSEs. I did quite well at my GCSEs. I actually did AS levels at school as well. But the AS levels I wasn't that good, to be honest. And the reason probably was I was spending every single hour away from school working on the farm, and I was probably messing around with all my schoolmates. And I think probably at a young age you do that. So I went to Harper Adams and did the university access course rather than doing my A2s. And that was probably one of the good decisions I made. Got me away, and I just stood on my own two feet, and we're actually studying subjects that I was interested in at Harper Adams, and actually got top marks in the year there, actually. I think probably because I messed around the year before, it made me focus that next year. Whereas I think a lot of the students also who went there with me on the access course, that was their year to mess around as well. Yeah. So, but no, if you got 60% on the access course, you got onto a degree. Well, like I said, I got the highest, I got 95%, so I was straight onto a degree. Decided to do food and marketing rather than straight agriculture. Just because I wouldn't say we're a big farm here, and just to broaden my horizons. But again, so glad that I did that. studying lots of things like why farmers have audits, not how the audit happens, because the problem is whatever they teach you this year will be different in 3 years' time. But you understand why audits are taken, the size of the supply chain, and actually the red trapped audits that we have are nothing compared to some of the audits high up along the supply chain, or Tesco come and audit your farm and then send you a bill afterwards as well for the audit unannounced. So no, that was good. And then from there, from Harper, you do a one year placement, in industrial placement, and I work for a company called Empire World Trade over in Lincolnshire, and they're a top fruits marketeer, apple and pear marketeer. And there I was managed by MDS trainees and ex-MDS trainees, and these guys were flying all over the world checking the quality of fruit in Brazil before it was getting brought back to the UK for the supermarkets, for example, and they were taking a lot of responsibility, and I thought, well, wow, I'd like to be part of that. So upon finishing Harper Adams, I did MDS. 2008 was when the global recession hit, and so I finished Harper in the summer of 2008. I was supposed to start...
What a time to leave.
Exactly. And that's what I think... Yes, we have our challenges at the moment, but there's always something, or there'll always be different challenges, and yeah, you've got to crack on, really. I was supposed to start MDS in September 2008. I was actually deferred back to March 2009 because a lot of businesses at that point just thought they'd tighten their belts and not take on the MDS students. And I almost didn't do MDS either because I was back on the farm for 6 months. But again, I did it, and yeah, I'm glad I did.
For the benefit of listeners who haven't heard of it, what is MDS?
MDS is an acronym for Management Development Services, and it's specifically within the fresh produce industry.
Farmers love acronyms.
Yeah, exactly. We got them all, haven't we? It was set up the year I was born, actually, because I've been to their 25th anniversary and their 30th anniversary. It was set up by 30 fresh produce companies who realised they were going to struggle to get managers in the future to run their businesses. So what they did, they set up like almost a cooperative, and what they do, you join MDS for a 2 year period, but over that 2 year period you work for four different businesses, so four of those 30 businesses, and the likelihood is at the end of that those businesses will offer you a job. You also go on these training courses, join being an MDS, and it's just fantastic because it's almost like four jobs in 2 years. The plan is to probably work within the operations department of one business, within the commercial department of another business, within the technical department of another business, and then the final one might be wherever your strengths lie. So it is good, and you realise how different businesses set themselves up as well. Some are more quality focused, some are more production focused, some are commercial focused. So, and you probably learn as much your weaknesses as your strengths as well, and they say you learn more from probably the difficult placements than the easy placements. And it was hard work. I was away from my friends. I worked in Herefordshire, Kent, and Lincolnshire and Cambridgeshire, working weekends, working night shifts.
And I suppose that once you finish one placement, you're then straight off to another part of the country.
Exactly.
New start again, exactly. Learning new things again.
Exactly, and missed friends' 21sts as well and things like that. But actually, I'm so glad I did it. It was really interesting. Right.
Let's talk about farm politics. I'm going to start with a specific one, actually. You went along to COP22 International Climate Summit in Marrakesh. There you were in your role as the NFU's Next Generation Forum chair. But yeah, tell me about that experience and perhaps similar experiences and what that has given you.
Ben, exactly. I mean, you see big like BBC headlines about the COP events and climate change and the United Nations, and you think that is miles and miles away from us, or even European discussions. Well, yeah, we can be involved in that, and farmers should be involved in global decision making, really. I cannot shout enough about the strength of the NFU and how important the NFU is to our industry and how professional the NFU is. So the NFU is the UK's largest lobbying body. We are members of then the World Farmers Organization, which is a global lobbying body for farmers based in Rome. And the whole point of that, it's all about breaking down political barriers and talking about issues that affect agriculture on a global scale. So that can be zero hunger, for example, climate change as well. So yeah, it's very, very important. COP22, I probably went, I got invited to go along and talk in some of these, in a panel that was there, or a few panels about what young farmers' views are. And then there, the the biggest advantage is you're meeting other young farmers from all over the world, other farmers all over the world, and just sharing all the challenges that we have. Next month, I'm actually going to New York to the United Nations to a food and agricultural conference over there, and that's representing the World Farmers Organization as well. So, yeah, I'm part of this in the World Farmers Organization group. It's a 30-month they've put farmers from all over the world together for 30 months, and we are I'm in the last year of that at the moment. But again, it's been fantastic.
I asked Guy Smith this question in his episode around about Christmas time. Farmers are an incredibly disparate group of people with a multitude of different views. How do you personally feel that you represent that? How can you go about representing that diversity?
That is a challenge, and it's just the diversity of our industry. But actually, I think that's a massive opportunity.
Yeah.
The one thing I would say is don't always look at it from your point of view. So yes, just because we are landowners on this farm, I've got to look at it from a tenant's point of view, or I'm a conventional farmer, look at it from an organic point of view as well. And I think that's where some people struggle sometimes. They look at it from just their point of view, and I think it's important to just have an open mind. I think when you're chairing a lot of these things as well, it isn't always your ideas anyway. You're there to chair, to ask the right questions, to tease out the right ideas, to give the quiet person an opportunity to speak as well, just as much as the person who talks a lot, really. But I think the NFU do get it right. I think it's a mix between the farmers putting forward their views and then the professional staff as well, who work very hard for us. The way I talk about it, almost the farmers are like the MPs, and the professional staff are the civil servants as well. Mm-hmm. And so, we're very, very, very lucky.
The list of challenges you gave me were Brexit, uncertainty, employment, succession, and climate change, to name just a few. How fit for meeting these is the NFU currently?
I think the NFU is in a very good place. Brexit, they've done a lot of research, and they've probably led on that. I think it was a good decision not to say we should stay in or go out. It was just an advisory. However, saying that, the referendum has split the country, and it's probably split the membership a bit as well. So I think the sooner we can have a bit of leadership from the politics and just get on with things, and that will add to the certainty that we need, really. The decision's made, get on with it. I mean, I voted Remain, but I think now if we are going to leave, it looks like we're going to have a new Prime Minister who maybe was led the Leave campaign. Well, let them show us, let them lead the way, and let's get it sorted and crack on, really. Climate change, then, if you were releasing their net zero strategy, and I think we're leading on that as well. I think that's very, very important. Maybe employment and skills and training, I think that's a massive, massive area and a massive opportunity, really. I know the current NFU Next Generation who've taken over from me, that they are leading on skills and training within the NFU. And actually, the NFU have positioned themselves quite well. The government have got the Food and Drink Sector Council, and that's basically brings, it's rather than looking at it from a farmer's point of view, let's look at it from a whole supply chain point of view. Let's provide this nation with the food that it needs, with the right nutrition that it needs as well. And that doesn't just come from agriculture. But what the NFU have done is quite clever. They've positioned the different forums and the different boards of the NFU to look at different areas that the Food and Drink Sector Council are looking at as well. And that means hopefully we're covering all bases. So they're doing a lot at the moment, and the Next Generation formally feeding into that as well.
Right, we're going to try the 1 minute soapbox.
Oh gosh.
Yeah. So, just while I.
So, yeah, there's one phone.
I don't know what to say.
This gives guests an opportunity to speak for 1 minute on a subject of their choice. This could be anything at all, it could be farming related, it could be nothing to do with farming at all, it could be a local cause. Do you have an idea of what you want to do?
So probably the NFU and wider industry collaboration.
Okay. 1 minute on the clock. Your time starts now.
Okay. Yeah, I believe that every single farmer within the UK should be an NFU member. Farmers, there's 100,000 of us, and we're a small part of the wider population within the UK. But actually, the NFU give us a much stronger clout when it comes to agricultural politics. And I've spoken in my interview how agricultural politics affects us, and it's going to affect us even more going forward. The benefits of being an NFU member is basically your voice gets heard, but also you get to engage with other farmers and other industries as well, actually, and it's very, very beneficial. I can see the clock's ticking, but also I feel the future of our industry is collaboration, and we can't all afford all the best kit and stuff like that. So that's just one example. If we can collaborate and work together as farmers, that the future is going to be a lot stronger for us. So
that was pretty good timing. And the future of the farm here, you mentioned. there's a lot, a lot going on for the future here, but. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, no, I'll say it. We're going to position ourselves right in the middle of food production, energy production, maybe not so much fibre production at the moment, but we do have the small sheep flock, so the wool is fibre production. We're HLS stewardship members at the moment, so we will continue our environmental credentials going forward. We work with the Woodland Trust as well. We planted lots of trees on the farm. I'd love to plant some apple trees on the farm and some walnut trees, not for supermarket production, but maybe to sell to the customers that come onto the farm as well. So I think it's funny, we're probably going back from a globalised market, going back to a localised market. And I think that's where the opportunities might lie, shorter supply chains, and let's have a bit more margin for our business. But that said, the public engagement side of it will be very, very important. We're going to be welcoming the public onto the farm. It might be visitors to our visitors centre and our children's play barn, or it might be people who come to our care farms for mental health and wellbeing classes. Long term, we'd even like to open a children's nursery alongside our play barn, because we think they complement each other quite well. And again, we talk about engaging with the public. Well, let's engage them from a young age. McDonald's speak to children from a young age. Coca-Cola speak to children from a young age. So agriculturalists, let's engage with the next generation. And then even we're thinking about putting a nursing home on the farm as well. So this is the 10-year plan. And we cover all bases, really. So we'd have the play barn, you'd have the children's nursery. And then you'd look after the older generation as well, which I think's brilliant. And I think come out to the countryside and let them engage with that as well. So, yeah, we're going to be busy.
Super. Let's go have a look around.
Yeah, let's do it. So we've put in a planning application. There's a red line around this whole yard. It's all going to be converted at some point. Maybe offices on here on the right-hand side. These two buildings here are going to be the portal frame buildings, but they're going to be demonstration and event space, basically. So that gives us a lot of flexibility, really.
We've already had two people knock on the door for a nursery. Yeah. Well, that'd make a big nursery footprint. Yeah.
If we look back to the farmhouse, we're very lucky to have a big old farmhouse, but it costs a lot of money to run a farmhouse. Yeah. So as us kids have moved out, our bedrooms have been moved into bed and breakfast rooms, basically. And
yeah. When did the bed and breakfast start?
About 2007, 2008, about 10 years ago. But I'd also say that the way the farm is, over the years, it's almost, oh, we'll build a cattle shed here, oh, we'll build a grain shed here, we'll build another cattle shed there. We are basically future-proofing this, and the front where we are now is for the public. The middle will be grain, and the back will be animals, and again, for biosecurity reasons and health and safety reasons as well. So, we've invested a lot, but it's a good opportunity to shape it, really. We're coming in through the back of the play barn, actually. And to the left of us is going to be the picnic area. In front of us is going to be the toilet block with a roof terrace on top for the parents to look over the picnic area. And then the big play barn is in front of us. We started building mid-January. Wow. It was 3 years probably in the planning phase.
What's the square footage of this building?
I said 16,000 square feet, but then it's third again up there.
Next week there's 500 square metres of underfloor heating going in, it's basically in the restaurant area.
This is no small investment.
So, but we're doing it properly,
We're doing it well, there's no customers here.
Yeah. But it'll cost double to come here than it would in a town play barn. But here you've got the countryside, you've got the animals, you've got
it's a play farm with a play barn.
So how many people within sort of an hour's radius or half an hour's radius have you got living?
An hour and a quarter. How many?
How many people?
14.
14 million people.
Manchester's an hour if the motorway's not
blocked. Yeah, I suppose it is.
Yeah. And then Black Country.
So there we are, there's the opportunity.
It's 5% of that population is your target audience. So that 700,000 visitors is our target audience. We're part of NAFAN, which is called National Farm Attractions Network, which is very much like the NFU, but for open farms. There's 200 open farms in the UK. and it's very, very open. Everyone shares all the facts and figures and shares ideas, which is good. But there's one down near London, and they said there's 18 million people within an hour of them. Well, actually, we're not far off that, really. So,
so move sheds.
So this is our modern grain shed, and this went up 5 years ago. And again, just make it big in space.
I'd say it's amazing. There are a few farms that I come onto that there were a few farmers back in the 50s who were highly visionary and actually saw this growth in kit. And farmers who have come on in future generations who've been incredibly lucky and haven't had to upgrade, but nearly everyone else is in the same boat as you.
Yeah, no, you're right. What I find quite interesting when we've been doing this building work and I've been up in cherry pickers, one of the highest buildings is one of the brick buildings that was built 200 years ago.
Really?
Yeah, so
that roadside one.
Make everything big, really. Yeah.
Oh, visionary at the time.
And future, 5 years time, go ape in the roof.
There we are.
And they can come off that balcony.
Yeah.
But let's earn some money before we spend it.
Yeah.
The ideas come from father as well, you see.
we have a moment, I'm sure you. But they've come from all sides, Val. My partner, she's brilliant.
But this is actually a livestock building. There isn't any livestock in here at the moment, but this is going to remain a livestock building. There's going to be a walkway for the public to look at the livestock.
Brilliant.
There'll be some smaller pens at the front with sheep and pigs in, and then there'll be larger pens at the back for cattle in. And it's very much commercial cattle as well, which we want the public to see. I've actually had a grant for this as well through the Frank Parkinson Trust.
Yeah,
and every year they provide £20,000 of grant funding to one company or one person, which is you either embrace new technology or you promote Brand UK. And that's what hopefully we're going to be doing, promoting Brand UK. So that's the thing. I think going forward, direct payments and BPS might be squeezed, but I think we need to look at other options for income as well and if other grants. So, yeah, again, that's the opportunist in me, really. I'll just take you over to the cattle handling system as well, which is near here. we put this in 2011, and this was through funding for a grant as well, an RDP. Over the years, we've always handled a lot of cattle. We used to have about 600 when foot and mouth. Well, we had about 600 when foot and mouth hit. And then we obviously learned from that as well. But over the years, we'd always make our own gates and make our pens. And there has been a few accidents or a few near misses. So this is one of the things I wanted to do when I came back from Arp Adams is put a proper handling system in that's safe for us, safe for the animals, and
animals
allows us to handle the animals more regularly.
The cattle come in, we can feed them across there, feed them from the back, we'll put another shed down there. But they'll basically come in 6-8 at a time, don't really want too many. That gate, except the socket hinges, comes there. And this forces the cattle and they go down there. So they can't kick back as far as a person goes. We've had to get two telehandlers to low balls in the past. This here, and because they can't see over very much,
it's a neat little system.
The only trouble, the big problem we've ever had is TB. We go in 2 days, 3 days later, they don't half remember. First time they fly through, second time's never quite as easy. But once they're in there, they can't come back. You've got a pen with some llamas and alpacas in, so they'll be able to walk to it.
Yeah.
And hopefully in the summer there'll be an ice cream van in there as well.
That's great.
I'm going to carry on if that's okay, if you don't mind. Thanks for coming out to see us.
That was Staffordshire farmer Richard Bower, who showed me around his farm with his father Ray. Thank you to you both, guys. Next time, I'll be heading to Leicestershire to speak to farmer Phil Jarvis, at the Game and Wildlife Conservation Trust's Allerton Project Farm. So I hope you can join me then. In the meantime, you can catch all previous episodes on thinkingcountry.com, on SoundCloud or iTunes or eatfarmnow.com. Please do leave the podcast a review. I would really appreciate that. I'll look forward to joining me next time on Meet the Farmers.